Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Consciousness Shift here on this lovely Saturday in December. My name is Nicole Tomasini, and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Gwen Barry. And today we have a fantastic guest working with water, has all kinds of a background, purification of one of the most important things that we have on this planet and that we need for our bodies. His name is Eric Gibson. And thank you, Eric, so much for joining us. It's a pleasure.
Nicole, thank you so much for having me.
It's great. And Gwen, why don't you say hello to the people as well?
Oh, yes. And thank you, Eric, for joining us today. It was really great of you on such short notice to come and talk with us about I'm reading on your bio that your mission is to empower women to become responsible water bearers in their communities. And the online curriculum and syllabus for the Shirley Gibson Trade School for Women. Can you tell us something about that? Well, after you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, Gwen. Well, thank you so much. I attribute a lot of the things I'm doing now to my experience with the Native Americans, the Hopi tribe and the Navajo of Arizona, up there by Tuba City, just a few miles of Winslow, in case any of your viewers are familiar with that area. The land there is still pristine. It's still virgin land, and that kind of tells me as I migrate out into different areas that have been heavily populated that their land is no longer as fertile as the people who really did very little to affect the soil. The soil is still in a very nutrient-rich condition. So I was very attracted to that and to their way of life because I just wanted to understand, well, how do you do this? And at the same time, they were having problems with heavy metals inside of their water, arsenic, uranium, lead, different things inside their water, and how they were coping with it as a water tribe. The Hopi are one of the oldest continuous settlements in the world. They were here before Columbus. So that experience, I would say, really was an epiphany in my life. I've been a plumber for most of my life, engineering, but I never really understood the mysteries of water until I met with them.
And when was that you met with them? When did you start doing work with them?
I was the lead scientist for the Hopi Water Project, and I met with Rob Wade, Clayton Nolte, a few other scientists went out there to see what they could do to help with the problem that they were having. And keep in mind, this is a water tribe calling in outside agencies to see if they can put their head together to see what they can do. They would usually purify the water through their ceremonies.
Yeah.
And so for them to call outside help was very telling of what's going on in our environment.
Sure.
Exactly. What was the first thing that you all found responsible for the heavy metals? And how did you confront it?
Well, without getting into their personal politics or what's going on there, the tribe, there's a coal mining going on there. And so there's a debate going on whether the coal mining was causally responsible for the contamination or whether it was not. the debate part of it I stayed out of. I was more solution oriented. Okay, so it's here now, regardless of how it got there. How do we remedy it? What do we do now so that, the situation was is that more people are dying than being born. So with that type of scenario, it's you're facing extinction as a tribe.
Now, was this on the Big Mountain Reservation?
They have the mesas, and they have most of Arizona has the same issue with the water. Most of them are using some type of filtration, some type of water treatment system. The Hopi were a little different. They were a little bit different with how they were, you know, how they were handling the situation. But most of Arizona is having that problem, but it's very concentrated in that region.
The Peabody coal mining, right?
Well, you said it. I didn't, but that was the news that was shared with me that they had some dealings with one of their attorneys that led them to make some decisions that they probably wouldn't have made had they had, you know, known better.
Yeah. So right now, is this an ongoing project or is that just the beginning of your journey with water?
Well, we got into a field of vortex technology that is very ancient, but at the same time, it's very innovative and new to us because we've forgotten a lot of our past ways. And that's going back to your original question of why I was so interested in empowering women to have a stronger voice in this field is because they were the foundation historically of bearing water for the family and for the tribe. Ma'at is the balance of the waters. Ma'at, Ma, Marine, Mary, Ma, child's first words, all saying the word water.
Yeah.
They're all saying water. And this relationship that she had with water was a very very spiritual connection. And they had an ancient practice when they, well, first of all, she was the one who knew where the water was. That's where the word witch came from. Because a witch that they call the witches today are the ones that locate the water. Well, that's where she got her name. She had the knack of being able to locate water as they were migrating from across Africa and inhabiting the known world that we know today. She was the water bearer. So she has a very impressive resume of her relationship with water, with the hydrogen, or the mother substance, as it's called in physics. And so it seems that as the segue of patriarchal control and rulership and development and the building of cities came in, this coincided with biblical reports of water shortages and a lot of the secular reports of water shortages in these different regions.
Okay.
Interesting.
And what time period that for us? Chronicle that.
I would say about 5,000 to 6,000 years ago.
Okay.
When you see writing coming along, when you see Hammurabi's code of laws coming on and knowing that for 145,000 years there were no rules that were written, but they acted more as a cohesive tribe under a matriarchal autonomous direction. It wasn't so much that she was the ruler or the boss, it's just the way it was. You put the round peg in the round hole and the square peg in the square hole. So it's just the way life was back then, that she had intuitive strengths and directions that were beneficial to the human family, and the male had his attributes. And somewhere along the road where the roles got crossed, it seems to me to indicate the beginning of a decline in water, in produce, food shortages, problems, pollutions, wars, territorial disputes all began around that 5,000 or 6,000 year mark.
The agricultural tribes and communities that sort of began to enfold the hunter-gatherers?
Well, any historian or any archaeologist or anthropologist will tell us that man's roots were that the feminine was a gatherer and the man later on became a hunter.
Yeah.
So for much of our evolutionary journey, we were gatherers, meaning that we did not have to plant food, but the food grew for us.
Yes.
And so the feminine was a part of an ecosystem. And like a domino, once you remove one segment of the ecosystem, the other ones are going to shift and change. This led to, there's a very well-known environmentalist. His name is Alan Savory. And so I follow him very closely. I don't know if you've ever heard of Alan Savory, but I follow him very closely. And his exact words were, during a TED Talk about 4 years ago, he said that no sooner that we remove the drum-beating natives from the land that we noticed problems with desertification, which led to what we're calling today global warming and climate change.
Yes, the winking out, the vanishing of the indigenous communities and their way of life. Yeah.
Yeah. So the drum beating natives were the feminine matriarchs, who today you may see them dancing in circles, or having their ceremonial sacred dances. But this is something that I believe is inside of their DNA, to have this symbiotic relationship with the land and dancing in the movement on the land, and as being a gatherer, not a planter, but a gatherer, the land responded to your presence and your rhythm and your energy.
I agree with that. I'm one of those circle dancers myself.
Well, it's so interesting because it sounds like the connection that you're making that I never made before, but now it seems completely obvious that the removal, so to speak, of the gatherer, of the feminine, of the witch who intuits what's going on around her for the good of the community, once that started to change, and now it's like we're reaping the full benefits of having thousands of years of not respecting the feminine on the planet, as well as the feminine being Gaia. And so now here we are with lots of water problems. The Hopi are asking people outside of their community. California is going through such a major drought, and the pollution of so many things. I mean, is that the through line here? Am I connecting the dots correctly?
Oh, you're spot on. Exactly. I agree, and I concur. And incidentally, the Hopi that you mentioned are a matriarch tribe.
Yes, it's like one of my teachers, one of my first teachers is Onondaga, and in the Confederation, it was always the women of the longhouses that were they oversaw and invited the council of the men who were, you know, keeping the safety and the hunting and such into the longhouse to bring bring their balance in. But it were the clan mothers that oversaw and nurtured the clan, the tribe, the people.
Absolutely. And you see if you go back far enough, you see an abrupt shift in that. There's an abrupt segue from a matriarchal too patriarchal.
Well, it was about, I think if you take a look at it, you'll find resource jealousy was the cause of war. And it began under women, too. I mean, the women gave the men the go-ahead to go and capture resources that were not their own when they became, you know, when they had little or none. And that's war. That's survival at some point. But I think that we all have to take credit for our part in being in this place right here and now. I do think the goddess really does, or the feminine needs to be re-anchored into the planetary community, along with a balance of the father, of Father Sky, you know? That's the thing, is the balance.
Well, when I was again at the Hopi at the water project, we were, I think it was maybe the second or third day in, we were looking over their they have a 10,000 gallon tank that they get the water pumped from, and we were looking at the field, and corn is something that's a very they call themselves corn rich if they have enough corn to get through the winter. They store it, and the whole community shares in this festival. So as we're looking over this beautiful virgin land and seeing how we can help, one of the Hopi elders says to me, he says, "Hey, Eric, come with us. We want to take you over to the house you're going to be staying at." We stayed in the middle of nowhere without any running water, without any electricity, without any gas, without a bathroom. I built the bathroom out of tires, and that's what I used during the time that I was there. Well, wow. They called the children over, and they said to the children, they said, "Okay, kids, it's time now. Are you ready to just do the singing?" And so they gather in front of the house and on the roof of the house, and I'm thinking, oh, this is nice. The little Native American children are going to do a little ceremony. Well, as they're doing this ceremony to the sky god, saying, "I am the corn, I am the this," in their little native tongue, I felt a rushing wind. I felt a change in my environment, and I really was startled. I had never seen anything like this, where the wind started blowing, dark clouds gathered over the house, and the crack of lightning appeared out of nowhere. And a few drops of water came down, and I looked over in utter fear at the elder, who looked at me and he said, "That's power." And so I was very curious. I had never, you know, you hear about rain bearers and you hear about people being able to do this, but I never knew it was possible. Okay, so I'm learning that the feminine energies were able to do this because inside of them is the mitochondria that runs the world. They pass on this mitochondria to the male, but the male does not pass it on in the male line. It's passed on solely from mother to daughter, but the children who were of this innocent age were still able to act under the energies of their mothers. So,
could you explain for our listeners what you mean by mitochondria? I know what you mean, but be more specific.
Okay.
DNA-wise.
Inside of the cell, they call it the powerhouse of the cell, where everything happens, the energy transfer, the nutrient transfer, the aquaporian channel is called the mitochondria. This mitochondria is only passed down from mother to daughter. Right now, as I speak, I'm running on my mom's mitochondria that she received from her mom. Now, my sisters can pass this down to their children, but I can't pass it down. So genetically, there you have it, your mother rule right there. It's right there in our genes. So as a child acting under my mother's direction, or as these children, they were able to communicate with the sky god, and they're able to bring down rain. And people will think I was crazy. I was there. I saw it. I know what I saw. And it happened at that specific moment that the children were doing this dance and singing.
I do not doubt you for a moment. I think that folks would be interested to know that you're a very grounded man. You have a very grounded background. And that what you have observed and experienced is probably a huge awakening, as we say, both spiritually and mentally, emotionally. But, Eric, why don't you give us a quick bio of what you've done with your life? I mean, it's really interesting, the places you've come from and been to.
And that you were a New York City police officer. Please tell us how that transition happened, because that is awesome.
I really have to give a lot of credit to my my supervisor. His name was Haile Selassie. And I can remember the day he walked into the PSA, or the precinct, as they call it, the police service area. And I was behind the desk, and Haile Selassie comes in, and he says he's got a Caribbean accent. He says, "I'm looking for so-and-so." And I said, "Hi, how you doing? My name is Eric Gibson." I introduced myself. And the first thing I thought to myself was, wow, he must have got picked on as a kid having a name like Haile Selassie. But I was just a kid from the city. I really didn't understand who he was or what that name represented. I now, later on, came to find out that he was one of the children of the emperor of Ethiopia, Haile Selassie.
Wow.
So he walks into our PSA. He's a supervisor, and he picks me out of all these different people who he could have chosen. He didn't know me. He says, "I want him to be my chauffeur." Well, at the same time, I was praying to get out of that environment because I felt like it wasn't the right place for me. I was a kid when I was hired on. I was glad to have a job where I could make money. And so it just happened that I had a job where I could take someone's life. And I really didn't want to be in that position. So I feel like the universe sent Haile Selassie to me as a guidance, as a wise mentor, as a teacher. So many of the things that I echo forth now, many years later, were born from the conversations I had in the patrol car with Haile Selassie. And the wisdom that he shared with me.
Wow.
It's just amazing. I mean, it's like the universe's tentacles are just everywhere. I mean, we know this. We know it, no one is left behind. All can manifest and all are on their path. But, you know, what a great example of here you are as a police officer and a Haile Selassie walks in and this is the planting of you. Working on water and empowering women. Amazing.
You know, he would tell me about his mother and his mother being a strong woman, and my mother was a strong woman. And so there was a common respect for the feminine in that environment. I worked with some amazing female police officers. One of them, she was probably barely 5 feet tall. Her name was Zaruba. And she's not with us anymore. But she had more courage and honor and respect in her heart than a lot of these violent police officers that you hear about that are so quick to misjudge a situation or use excessive force to handle a very minor job. And That's what I've experienced with female police officers through the across the board. You'll find very few of them involved in these shootings or violence against the community.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. You have notable exceptions, but that makes a lot of sense.
So all these little experiences go through my mind and formulate, a plan of action. And so I feel that the feminine is the rightful steward of the planet, and for the love of the planet, that the patriarchs or the powers that be should really, and I feel like nature's got us in a position where we really don't have too much of a choice in that matter, but a lot of the behavior that males take on are coming from a place that's not of, it's of more ego than of acceptance and love and intuition. It's more of a saving face. I can't be wrong. I have to be right. I have to be in charge, and I have to do, even if I don't know how to. That's the type of, I believe, mentality that got us into the position that we're in now.
Oh, it's dear.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. I just came off
brave,
of a jury duty.
You have to be strong. You have to be fast. You have to be, you have to act like a man. Now,
yeah.
Why would you have to act if this is something that you naturally are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, well, I think we should just, so you came from that experience and all of this understanding and then become an ordained minister as well.
Well, that was, you know, I don't know, I guess everyone is familiar with Jehovah's Witnesses. And in my community, they are doing, in New York, they were doing some beautiful, beautiful things for the community to offset some of the terrible things that you hear going on as far as violence against African Americans, specifically the males. The area I came through, many of my friends are dead from drugs or from violence or in prison. And so when you look back and say, wow, I made it through a maze, the Jehovah's Witnesses were a safe haven. Now, doctrinally, I don't adhere to their doctrine or anybody else's doctrine. I don't really, I think that we make these things up to help us to get through what we need to get through. And there's truth to some of the stories, some of them not. Some of them are good stories. I think it was Joseph Campbell that said, you know, it's these stories that help us along in our journey to becoming who we are.
Yeah.
So I have nothing bad to say. I did leave because of unpleasantness that I found that were going on as far as, and I can say it, as far as some molesting of children.
Oh,
so
dear.
When I found out about it and was kind of swept under the carpet, I felt like that was not the right thing, and I parted company with them politely. But this is where I received a great deal of ministerial training, studying of the Bible and scriptures and history, and kind of was able to put things in a little bit of perspective historically as it's reported through the Bible. The numbers come to be off when you start looking at actual time periods, and they say that, you know, 7,000 years is a creative process, and we're able to carbon date, you know, human existence for almost 150,000 years. So those numbers are a bit off, but, you know, it was a place to be and it kept me alive at the same time.
Yeah.
I look back and I would say that that meeting room with those kind people was a safe haven because I could have been out getting involved with things that were negative.
Yeah. No, it's good to remember aloud too, so that people connect the dots with how we all, as you say, through the eyes of someone like Joe Campbell, come to see that everybody's story has a meaning as a hero's journey.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and then after that, and then somehow along the way, we decided, when we're Eric Gibson, to go into being a filmmaker and an author of the mythology of race, the movie, and then the most recent one that you made about the water bearers, Awakening the Water Bearer. So how does that transition in?
You know, that's a very good question. I had the opportunity to work with a brilliant professor of psychology. She teaches here at City College, and the most benevolent teacher you ever want to meet. She has her students over that don't have families, so she has them over her house for the holiday. I mean, how many teachers do you know that would do that? That's kind of like to serve with love with a modern twist on it. So she came to be a great research advisor for the mythology of race and just a champion in the area of a better understanding to the human family, to what their relationship it is outside of what we're taught that we're this race. I'm going to segue out for a minute. I was at a gymnasium once, and I was in a jacuzzi. I had had a back injury from the police department, so I was going to go in this jacuzzi for a little therapy, and there were about 6 or 7 women in there. And I said to myself, wow, you know, I know they're going to feel a little awkward, you know, these 7 or 6 what you would people society calls white women, and this African-American guy getting in the jacuzzi, you know, you could kind of feel the uneasiness. And they're looking away but looking toward you. No one is acknowledging what's happening, you know, that little awkwardness. So I got in there, and a lady accidentally touched me with her leg. And she said, oh, excuse me. She said, I was just stretching. You know, I had an injury, and I'm trying to do some therapy. And I said, really? I said, I had an injury, and I'm here to do some therapy. It came to be that everybody in that jacuzzi had had a different type of surgery on their spine.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so had I looked at a race and said, you know what, we shared some good information. We shared tips and stretching and therapies and everything. We created this. It was just a support group that came out of nowhere. But had I let the color of their skin separate me from having that conversation, or they had done that, it never would have happened.
Wow, what a great example. Yeah.
A born-again somebody gets in the jacuzzi, and the whole conversation just, we all just took off one at a time, and the whole conversation kind of ended. But it was experiences like that that I carried with me. So Professor Anderson was able to share a lot of information with me and research. And then one day, as I'm so busy writing my book and then working on the mythology of race, she puts down a video in front of me. She says, you might want to take a look at this when you get a chance. The video was depicting the accounts of rape and violence and brutality against women all over the different continents. And it was truly, truly eye-opening. And so what I connected with that was trying to understand, why is it always the feminine being assaulted by the patriarch? It's the same suspect. It's the same MO. It's been going on for thousands of years of men seeing a woman saying, I have the right to just take you and do whatever I want with you. Kidnapping women, thinking that, you know, in time she will come to love me, was the mentality of the women that were kidnapped by a lot of times during the Middle Ages. And they would just, the family would never see them again. So that kidnapping allowed a greater kidnapping during the African slave trade.
Yeah.
It was a custom. It was a practice. It was normal. So I couldn't ignore the steps that led to the story that I was looking at, trying to understand, and the writing of the mythology. I had to go even further back and say, well, this is where the injustice was born, was the dehumanizing of and the dethroning of the feminine.
And you can say the same thing about the land. you know, people saying, this is my land, quote unquote, mine. I own this and I can do whatever I want with it. I can frack it. I can do all kinds of things with it. It's like the same thing as what's happening with physical human females, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In our permaculture, trees and plants adapt based upon the presence of the humans or the people there. You eat a seed, you eat a piece of fruit, the seed is in your mouth, and it, you spit it to the ground, it germinates with a rich source of your DNA, so that the seed grows up knowing the matriarch, who is the steward of the family and of the land. And so it will learn, it will by process learn to assimilate what is necessary from the soil to the plant that's necessary for the person.
That's quite an ecological system you've got there. It's very spiritually grounded. Is that Professor Anderson's influence on you?
Well, the pharmaceutical companies come to these native tribes and want to find out about their cures.
Yes.
Okay, there's a lot of products on the market that come from the indigenous tribes. How did you do that? And it's always been the case for thousands of years, man struggled with scurvy. Now, the feminines already had known, you know, about vitamin C and about which plants, and the witches were the ones that were able to make up the different brews and the different concoctions that were for the healing of the human body. Well, when we got away from that, we went through thousands of years of darkness, of scurvy. Maybe not thousands, I'm sorry, maybe hundreds of years of ignorance with scurvy, starting when they started exploration and the sailing and all the Ponce de Leons and the Christopher Columbuses who were sailing to these different regions. They had problems with scurvy. And they didn't know. They didn't know the pine needles. They didn't know the lemon seeds that they could store with them that would take on the energies of vitamin C that would keep their system running efficiently. So we reached a period of darkness that we're in many ways still in, as we've gotten further and further away from the Great Mother and from indigenous wisdom and from Native American tribes.
That's quite true. I agree with you very much. Medicine women still exist out there, though, in many places. A lot of the in-depth indigenous schools and villages that are popping up in this country and in South America, South and Central America, are trying to reestablish them.
Well, 60% of our food supply is produced to this day by women.
Huh.
60% of the food supply is created by women. They control about 3% of the earth.
Are you talking about the grains and the vegetables, and you're talking about grown out of the planet, right? Not taken off the surface. And
grown, farmed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, 60% of the women of the world are the farmers that produce the world's food supply.
I didn't know that.
So, with the way that trees and plants sequester CO2 out of the environment, out of our space, they're basically keeping us afloat. They're keeping, you know, I guess proverbially, they're keeping hell from breaking loose.
Yeah.
And so to support them is basically to support ourselves, to support the women who are adhering to the heirloom farming, not the hybrid farming. Heirloom are foods that were genetically grown with human beings in mind. Hybrids were grown with making money in mind. And
yeah,
so the foods that are grown with making money, hybrid foods, lead to expensive doctor visits later on because it leaves a waste product inside the cell because the body was never evolved to handle a synthetic or something that was not man-made, was not nature-made in the human genome, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, definitely.
But the heirloom foods, most of them being purple, are rich in antioxidants. Purple black rice, black or purple oranges, bananas. And sometimes if you're in a grocery store, just take a note of the purple foods, carrots that were purple before they became hybrid. And so these foods burn clean in the body. And these are still part of the genetic line from the matriarchal gatherers. The food grew for them. It
That's
grew
interesting.
For them.
Because you're talking about red and blue foods.
Yes.
Yeah.
Blueberries, very, very high in antioxidants. Not too many people have heard of black rice or purple rice, but the emperors would only eat it, and it was the nutrient, antioxidant-rich heirloom, the mother of all of the rices.
Well, it makes so much sense because I'm always drawn to purple food.
I think we all are. I cook with blue potato.
Yeah. Like, I know this has got to be a good idea. I just feel it. And there you go. Thanks, Eric.
Well, thank you.
Confirmation. I've been reading, as you've been talking, too, a little bit about Professor Anderson. And she's talking about how we are linked in a planetary network, sharing a common energy field, which is a big part of where both Nick and I come from. And I know in my own path, one of the things I'm aware of is that we're looking for a shift in consciousness in humanity, and that shift is back to into nature in many ways.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. When we imitate nature, we seem to stay out of trouble.
Well, and we forget that we really are part of nature.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Absolutely. We forget.
Yeah,
we forget.
It's very patriarchal. It's about this dominance of the environment, dominance of animals, dominance of anything, and the nature to be, instead of being challenged, to being confrontational. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes.
There's healthy challenge and common goals or even unique goals to the self, but then there's the conflictory or confrontational point of view, which is very patriarchal. We're seeing a lot of it around us now.
You know, I have to admit that I was guilty of being a party of that same train of thought. Being a Jehovah's Witness or being a Christian, and the Bible teaches you that the woman was supposed to be in subjection to the man as to the Lord. This is what we taught. This is what I taught from the pulpit. This is what I taught during Bible studies. This is what I spoke about in front of thousands of people at different conventions. And so when it's common knowledge, it's almost like the air. How
yeah.
do you not breathe the air in your environment? So I cast blame aside. I can't blame anyone.
No.
All we can do from here is apologize, make amends, listen, and cooperate through cooperation, you have synergy. Synergy is free energy. So if I cooperate, I can have free energy. If I don't and keep banging my head up against a stone, being stubborn, then we're, my children going to reap the consequences of my ignorance.
It's about awakening, I think, personally. That's the seed, is awakening, in my point of view.
I agree. That's been my experience. I need to awake. I need to realize that listen, Gwen, my wife, my first wife and I would have ongoing arguments about me being the head of the household and pointing that Bible in her face and saying that she's supposed to have my dinner ready.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Now, listen to this. This has been over 20 years ago. She's remarried now. She believes that she's supposed to be in subjection to her husband, and I don't believe that anymore.
Wow.
Yes.
How things turn around.
Yeah, she's remarried. She has a beautiful husband, and she's just we're friends because we were kids together, you know. But I have the deepest respect for her, and I am deeply sorry. I am deeply repentant of my former belief system.
Wow. That's such a great message to put out there. It's like, that seems to be an underlying that maybe we as light workers don't always bring up is, you know, we talk about forgiveness and how it's important for us to forgive ourselves. It's important for us to forgive others. But also that, like, when you do go, okay, you know, I did this because of this, and I realize that I do not want to do that anymore, and I see the awakening, and I see what's really going on. And so right now, I think, all bets are off. We're just happy to have an awakened being, you know, and whatever was done. We've all done either in this lifetime or others. So, you know, welcome. And that's it. You know, we walk together. It's just so great.
Yeah.
With
light, not a load. No load,
right. Just
light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so
are you... that are burning right now, there are too many very serious issues to be stubborn when we're looking at change and seeing it unfold right before our eyes.
Yes.
If we look at what's going on in the flooding in Ireland, Northern Ireland is experiencing flooding, putting sandbags up to keep the waters from taking over the village.
Yes.
Uganda.
Seen that. It's the El Nino this year. The model is coming up worse than even in 96, 97, which was the worst one we ever saw. It's coming up stronger for this year, and it means that the Southwest and Northwest, and especially some of the reservations, but California big time with all the fires that have created the hard pan, the floods of water that are coming are not even going to sink into the earth enough because it's been so burnt and drought-ridden that we're going to have really big problems in California and in other in Oregon and in Washington, not so much Washington, but the flooding that'll come even with their rich, water-rich soil with this new El Nino, it's going to raise people's awareness in a way that won't be, that'll be, will have its fear attached to it. Maybe that's a catalyst for what's going on actually today in Paris for leaders in this world, what we call leaders in this world, to come together and realize, you know, the Chinese in their capital city, they've had like 3 days last week of red alerts, which means there was too much pollution in the air for people to leave home safely. Children can't go to school. And they still want to burn fossil fuels, which is creating the problem. And it's just, I guess we have to really see, you know. It's one thing to wake up and understand and know, but the climate change is there. And this is why we need people who are working with water, who are working on in every direction to bring us back into balance with the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What nature is able to do through trees and plants is to sequester the carbon from the atmosphere where it's existing as a gas, sequester it back into the tree and into the soil.
It's true. You know, we had in 1973, we had the hole in the ozone, and we actually healed that with the Thatcher-Reagan doctrine that they put into place to cut carbon emissions enough to heal it, and we did it. People forget that, you know. We've done it before. We can do this, you know.
Well, as we keep on, you know, it's a conflict of interest to want to produce and at the same time reduce.
Yes.
The conference in Paris, God bless them. I appreciate, you know, thoughtfulness. When we find out that there's a carbon footprint involved in just the mere gathering, that for one person exceeds, it would take about 10 trees that they have not planted yet to counteract the carbon footprint of one of the people who are flying in to the conference.
Yeah.
So when you look at that type of thinking, you wish them well because we're all a team and we're all in this together and we want good to come out of it. But part of your brain wants to be logical.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know what, how did we do it before? And how can we do it without having a dollar sign as our main interest? How do we do it without being guided by a dollar sign?
That's why the permaculture seminars and workshops by people like yourself and Starhawk and so many others are out there trying to do right now are so vital.
Yes, my brother-in-law, Amos Taylor, was the founder of the Green Gorillas. Him and Liz Christie, I think, was her name. And what they did with, in New York in the 70s is they just started breaking in with an actual lock cutter into vacant abandoned lots where garbage was being stored. They cleaned it up, and they started planting gardens in there.
Yeah.
And from there came the idea of community gardens.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm aware the community gardens came out of New York. As far as urban, it's urban. Bedrock comes out of New York in this country, or at least on this side of the country. They did it in Prague and London, too.
Yes. In the 60s, I think it was a young lady, I forget her name, but Silent Spring was the name of the book that started everything going, the Kennedy administration. Yes, Carson. I think it was Rachel Carson.
Rachel Carson. She's one of my heroes.
Yes. So my brother-in-law, he was a kid in college, and they were nerdy, and they were going to help nature. So they would take balloons and fill them with seeds and water, and they would throw them out, you know, indiscreetly into different areas so the gardens would pop up. This was one of their tactics. They would fill the balloons with seeds, and then they would throw them over the fence, and then the garden would come up, and Later on, they started breaking into lots, and the whole story of the line is a fascinating story, but they changed the Bowery. You remember the Bowery where you had the panhandlers, and I remember as a kid, my mom saying, oh, roll up the window. You know, when we're going through the Holland Tunnel, you had to roll the window up because you were afraid of the panhandlers.
Yeah.
Well, the community gardens actually lowered the crime rate when human beings are placed back in a garden environment. Going back to the Bible, that I can't close the book completely. I got to look at that statement that was made in Genesis where we were told to turn the earth into a paradise, into a garden. Plant trees. Plant your own food. Take care of your own. Don't commercialize your food. When we commercialize our food, we lose about 75% of the nutritional value if the plants were allowed to evolve under a steward or be, you know, or a home garden. If you look at the BRICS level or the nutritional level of, let's say, a tomato that is grown at home using the kind of water we use as structured water, it will actually have 75% more nutritional value than an organic or commercially grown tomato.
Wow.
Really great to know. Well, we only have about 3 more minutes left, and I think it's great that the people have a lot of background of who you are and so much information that you know, and they can just go ahead and watch the movie that you just made, Awakening the Water Bearer. I see that the website you have up our Sacred Springs for the number 4, not the word, life.com. So sacredspringsforlife.com. And then the home is our promised land. So why don't you tell us just briefly a little bit about Awakening the Water Bearer, and then how people can watch it and how people can contact you if they would like.
Well, when Rob Wade was working on the implosion unit that was going to, the bottom line is that we wanted to figure out how to get high-energy spring water to come through the tap. There are places in Venezuela, I think it's called Angel Falls, and they've measured the energetic value of the water. They found it to be 40,000 times the energetic value of tap water.
Wow.
So, I want to know, well, how come we can't have this through our home? Well, come to find out that we can. So there's been a great deal of people for a long time. Gerald Pollack is one of them, who's talking about, I guess, easy water, structured water, is the same thing as what the natives called sweet water, and it is the water within the water that super hydrates plants and people and life. And so the bulk water that we get is not able to fit into our cells properly because it's too big. The clusters are too large. So we drink as much water as we can, but we're still hydrated, but we're wasting water. So part of our research was to figure out how we could get spring quality water through our homes so that we could hydrate the cells and not waste water.
Wow.
Excellent. Hallelujah.
Eric, I hope you'll come back and spend some time with us and talk with us again.
Well, I'd like to come out to New York and sit down and have a nice chat together and see what we can do in those areas over there about stimulating interest in the work that you ladies are doing, that I applaud you for, and be able to increase the bounty for everybody.
Sounds excellent. Excellent, Eric. I'd love to have you over here in New York. And Gwen's in South Florida. So, you know, we got all the gamut, and you're in L.A. So, I mean, San Diego. So we got a grid going.
Well, Haile Selassie's over in Florida. He's over in Tampa.
I'm on the East Coast down beside Palm Beach in Lake Worth.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Still not too far away.
Not too far.
So we'll go just a little bit over here. The Awakening the Water Bearer, it's on YouTube, right?
Yes, we're doing well with, I think it hasn't even been a week yet, and we're just approaching about 9,000 views. And so we'd like to encourage any of your listeners to share the link with their neighbors and in their community and learn a little bit about water. Just get a basic understanding of this fluid that is what we all have in common. It's what we all are connected. It connects us all, and we all drink from the same cup. So I think once we start understanding that, we'll be less apt to put chemicals down the drain. We'll want to learn how to turn our tap water into a structured type of water that is better than you received it from your municipal water district. As you're sending the water back to municipal water district cleaner than you received it, it's less chemicals that they have to put in to keep the water wholesome to send it back to us.
Nice. Yeah, we should definitely have more of a conversation about it. So check out Awakening the Water Bearers on YouTube. You can find Eric. Is that the correct website, sacredspringsforlife.com?
Yes. You know, Facebook is a good place to soiree, and I meet folks from all over the world and all over the country there. And so that seems to be a really nice hub. So if they just look for Eric Gibson on Facebook and friend me, and then that's how we met. And so that's where we're at.
Awesome. That's excellent. Well, thank you, Eric, so much for coming on and imparting your wisdom. And thank you so much for all the work you're doing to help the planet and help everyone that lives here, everything that lives here. So we'll definitely have you back. And Gwen, of course, thank you very much for doing these Saturday shows. And this has been the Consciousness Shift.
Oh.
Yeah. Go ahead. Say your goodbyes for the people.
yeah, I will. Thank you, Eric, for being with us today. Look forward to talking to you again and taking the time with us. And Nick, thank you so much for working the boards today and doing such a wonderful job of it. And please don't forget, it's the season to gift. You can gift from SpiritTherapyNYC.com with Nicole. She has really great readings. People over there that have a lot to offer. Check her out. And don't forget us, the Ancestor Aromacology at Daughters of Isis. That's daughtersofisis.com. And that's it.
Yeah, Eric, thanks so much. And thank you for listening to the show, everyone. And we'll see you next week. Have a great night.